Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
When it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro-Pacific Capital, and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, this is Peter Schiff. I am president of Euro-Pacific Capital, and I'm the host of Wall Street Unspun, a program 1 hour live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. We do the show live on my website at www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net, and also we do it on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz, 5.07 megahertz on shortwave. The number to call, toll free, it's a call-in show. I invite your calls and comments. The number to call is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Anyway, a lot to talk about. A lot of stuff happening over the last week. First of all, the dollar, of course. I always talk about the dollar on this show. I mean, the main idea or what I espouse for investments is that people invest in foreign markets, in foreign stocks, principally because I want to help people get out of the U.S. dollar. It is a currency that, in my opinion, is likely to lose a tremendous amount of its value. And as I do this show, the U.S. dollar is at the lowest point it has been since I've been doing this show. The British pound is worth $2.05. It's about a 30-year high in the British pound. The British pound wasn't worth this much since I was in high school. The Australian and New Zealand dollars have hit new highs. I mean, the Australian dollar is almost 90 cents now. It's about 88 cents and change. The New Zealand dollar is over 79 cents, almost 80 cents. It wasn't that many years ago the New Zealand dollar was 40 cents. The Canadian dollar is worth more than 96 cents. Just a few years ago, it was worth 65 cents. You know, the dollar is going down. You know, the euro has hit an all-time record high today. But, you know, the euro is moving up very slowly, which is why the dollar index, and I've talked a lot about the dollar index and the 80 support level that goes back to the 1970s and 1980s. We're still holding the 80 level. I think we closed today at about 80.15 or 80.20. It's just been going down slowly because the euro is by far the largest component in the dollar index. And while the dollar has been weakening against the euro, it's been weakening slowly. And so the dollar index has not really crashed through support. I think that could happen at any day. You know, gold was up about $9, $10 today. Silver was up over 30 cents. Still, we haven't broken out to new highs on gold and silver. I think that what's keeping gold and silver in check is the idea that this 80 level is going to act on support and that the dollar might bounce off it. I think that some of the metals traders might be a little reluctant to buy into gold when potentially the dollar could bounce off of long-term support. But I think the long-term support looks very tenuous. You know, we've gone down there three or four times in the past. And, of course, never with as great a fundamental, the macro fundamental problem as the one we have today. So the dollar looks dangerously close to collapsing. I know this week the Dow Jones hit a record high in nominal terms, and we need to stress that. It's in nominal terms only of 14,000. And a lot of the bulls on Wall Street are trying to, you know, celebrate and congratulate themselves on this in performance. But the year-to-date performance of the Dow pales in comparison to the rest of the world. I think the U.S. market is underperforming the global markets, maybe by its largest percentage ever. I mean, I'm not positive, but I think foreign markets have tripled the returns year-to-date as the domestic markets, which has been the case for the last several years. But of course, you know, not only is the Dow Jones losing value relative to other stocks, it's certainly losing value just relative to other currencies. And I pointed out on CNBC the other day, I was on with Mark Keynes, Again, I don't know if anybody saw that one. I think this was just a few days ago. And, you know, I pointed out that during the last 4 months, where the U.S. The Dow had been up about 13 or 14%, that was about the identical percentage gain that the Canadian dollar had over the same period of time. So that I'd said in Canadian dollar terms, the U.S. the stock market didn't do anything. And, of course, I pointed out that oil was up about 25% over that same period of time, so that price in oil, the Dow Jones bought 10% fewer barrels of oil then than it did now. And, of course, oil was up another dollar a barrel, but it closed over 75. It's very close to its record high. It's moved, in fact, on a weekly basis. There's only been 1 week, in history where the Dow has closed, where oil has closed at a higher price than it's at today on a weekly basis. And, of course, the week isn't over yet. We have a couple more days. But, so we're at a very, very high price for oil. A couple other major announcements, too, that we had. Bear Stearns, and I've been saying this, that these subprimes, these collateralized debts are worthless, and they've been, and Wall Street has value. Well, today, Bear Stearns announced that basically their two funds were basically worthless. The fund that was not leveraged ended up with a 96% loss, or 94% loss, 6 cents left. The leverage fund suffered a 100% loss, completely wiped out. Now, obviously, if the unlevered fund lost 94%, the real losses in the leverage fund are well in excess of 100%. It's just that the hedge fund shareholders cannot be required to come up with a margin call. So obviously, the losses that exceed 100% of the value of the assets are going to be borne, by Bear Stearns or borne by creditors or somebody else. I mean, somebody else is going to have to pony up for those losses, but they're obviously staggering. If on an unleveraged basis they lost 94 cents of a dollar, I can imagine, because the levered basis was levered more than 10 to 1, maybe 20 to 1. I mean, so the losses in that fund have got to be staggering, absolutely staggering. But, of course, the amazing thing is this fund posted about a 40% return last year, out of which the managers probably got a very handsome performance bonus. And I've been saying this all along, that these hedge funds and these phony performance bonuses, that a lot of these profits are fake because they don't really exist. They have non-marketable securities. They're not trading them. And their investors are not actually getting their money back. I mean, what precipitated the collapse of these Bear Stearns hedge funds was a couple of clients actually wanted their money back. And, of course, the fund couldn't pay it, because the minute they tried to sell some of these supposedly highly valuable securities, they found that they were completely worthless. And, these are two hedge funds. There are 9,000 hedge funds out here. There's no way these are the only two hedge funds that own these structured mortgage products. There's no way. And all the other funds are going to suffer similar losses. And so, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Also, I'm going to get to the phones, but I know we want to talk quite a bit today about the Ben Bernanke's testimony and the questions that was asked of him and his responses. And if anybody happened to watch, I was watching on CNBC, if anybody watched Bernanke and some of the congressmen question him, they might want to call up. It's a good topic. And I also, if you notice, and I'll read this list, when I was on CNBC last time, I made a comment to Mark Haynes, and I said, Mark, instead of, poking fun at me, which they always do, I said, you ought to be congratulating me based on all the accurate calls that I've made on this network. And he said, I have a list. Why don't you send it to me, and I'll read it on the air. So I took him up on it, and I sent him a list. And I know he had it in his hand today because he referred to it, but I don't think he actually read anything from my list. Now, if I'm wrong, I wasn't watching the network all day or his whole show, so I don't know if he actually read anything from the list that I sent him. But I have the list here, and I will read it on the air, and I'll read you what I sent to Mark Haynes, and we'll see if he actually is true his word and actually reads it. But I did see Mark in when he was questioning somebody, did bring up some of my points and actually said to somebody, hey, adjusted for inflation, the Dow is lower than it was 7 years ago, so why are we celebrating? I mean, he actually made that point, so I got to give him credit for that. Anyway, let's go to the phones for now. I got two calls on the line. Let's take Larry calling from South Dakota. Go ahead, Larry.
I know that a while back you recommended these Canadian parrot fans or whatever, and your investors lost a lot of money. A few weeks ago, I called you and I told you I was buying the ultra-short financials, you told me I should sell it, send you the money so that you could invest it. I would like to know, why do you feel that your advice, that an investor should take your advice and pay you 3% when he can just use his brains and he doesn't have to pay any Jew and can make money on his own?
But you just referenced me by calling me a Jew, so I guess that shows, your frame of mind, so I might as well end the conversation. But I don't know who this individual is. I didn't speak to a Larry from South Dakota about any kind of fund that was short. I also don't know what he's referring to where my investors lost money. He said Canadian something. I'm assuming he meant the Canadian Royalty Trust that we've been recommending for 8 years, and there was a period of time that we talked about on this program where the Canadian government imposed higher taxes on these funds, and many of them dropped. And so some of our clients who owned some of those funds on paper, either had losses or had their profits reduced. Now, some of those funds, in fact, our largest position, our biggest Canadian trust as a firm, has actually moved up so much in the last 2 or 3 months that it is actually now higher than it was prior to the Canadian government imposing those higher taxes. It's incredible. The thing has moved up 60% or so from the lows, and it's now above where it was. And most of the other Canadian oil and gas trusts that we did own for clients that dropped have recovered substantially. Some of them are still below their peaks, but you also have to realize that I have been buying Canadian oil and gas trusts for my clients for, I guess, 10 years. And we've collected a tremendous amount of dividends, and most of my clients have made a tremendous amount of money in those particular Canadian oil and gas trusts. It's possible, and maybe this peak, I don't know, and maybe never added any money, and maybe is down. I just don't know. I mean, I'm not familiar. I don't recognize his voice, and I certainly didn't talk to him personally, and I don't remember talking to anybody about being short the market. Although I do generally, discourage people from shorting the market. Even if you read my book, Crash Proof, and one of the things that has differentiated me from a lot of the bears out there is I have not recommended short selling. I just thought that there was too much inflation out there, and obviously with the Dow at 14,000, in general, people who have been shorting stocks have been losing money. Now, if you were right and shorted, let's say, home builders at the right time or some of the financials, then potentially you're doing well. But in general, I think my advice to, instead of shorting U.S. stocks, which were clearly rising in nominal terms, I thought the much better approach is to buy foreign stocks, to invest in, in non-dollar foreign stocks and play it that way. Rather than betting that U.S. stocks will fall, bet that foreign stocks will rise. And, of course, that's been the winning strategy. I mean, my clients are far better off because they followed my advice to buy foreign stocks than people who followed other bears' advice and just shorted domestic stocks. I mean, if they shorted the wrong stocks, people could have lost quite a bit of money. Anyway, I have another call. Hopefully he'll be a little more friendly and less anti-Semitic. I've got Mars on the line from Las Vegas.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good, thank you. I read your book. Fantastic.
Thank you.
I have two questions. You're saying that the central banks, once they stop supporting the dollar, will have their own currencies appreciate in value. Now, what I'm thinking is that we're exporting inflation and propping up those markets and getting them to produce things. I understand that. But won't those, who will actually step in to, say the central banks don't, they support the dollar. Will people themselves try to liquidate and go into different currencies?
Well, they're already trying. I mean, that's the reason the dollar is going down. Remember, you have a lot of central banks still buying dollars, and the dollar is falling nonetheless. So, I mean, there are private individuals who have, figured this out and who don't want to be in the dollar. And so, there isn't sufficient private demand for dollars right now. But I think, central banks are going to, if they haven't already started quietly, diversifying out of the dollar, and it's going to continue.
So you still think it's safe to own foreign assets, though, because even though they've been inflated by us exporting our currency, so to speak?
Well, I think that it's better to own foreign assets than domestic assets, and I don't want to own U.S. dollars. So the question is, do I want to own foreign cash? Do I want to own foreign bonds? Do I want to own foreign stocks? Or do I want to own some combination? I mean, I've always come down on the way to go is to buy stocks, but to buy conservative, yield-oriented stocks. I just think they give you the best of both worlds of appreciation and income, and I think they protect you from global inflation, which is clearly taking place. I mean, we are exporting inflation. Countries all around the world are printing too much money. Therefore, it doesn't make sense to just be a big holder of cash or bonds. I think you want to own real things. But you don't want to, you know, I don't want to buy very expensive stocks, speculative-oriented stocks. I want to buy stocks, you know, that are still represent good values based on the assets that I'm acquiring and the income that they produce.
Okay. Thank you. The second question is, it sounds like the U.S. could be heading for a disaster, you know, unemployment maybe reaching 60-70% like in the Great Depression.
I don't think it's going to be 60-70%, but, I mean, it'll be a lot higher than it is now.
So, since we're a service-oriented country at this time, how do you feel those service industry will actually fare? I mean, will it do better? Or will it...
The service industry is not going to fare very well. I mean, the only reason that we can be a service sector economy is because foreigners are supplying us with all the goods that we're not manufacturing. Now, right now, they're supplying it to us in exchange for the dollars that we print. Well, when they no longer wish to do that, then we can no longer be a service-oriented economy. We're now going to have to produce the goods for ourselves. Either we're going to have to produce what we want to consume, or we're going to have to produce what somebody else wants to consume so that we can trade for the goods that we want to consume. So we're going to have to move from a service-oriented economy back to a production-oriented economy, just like everybody else. I mean, the only way you can be a service-oriented economy is to be a creditor nation and have a current account surplus at the same time so that you can earn. You have to have a way to earn the foreign exchange to pay for your imports. And we just don't have a way of doing that right now. The only way we can earn foreign exchange is by exporting. So we're going to have to move back towards a service sector, a manufacturing economy, and that's where you're going to have a lot of this transitional unemployment because people are going to lose jobs in the service sector, and they're not going to just, you know, instantaneously appear in manufacturing. It's going to take capital, it's going to take savings, we're going to have to make factories, so it's not going to be a very smooth transition, but it's going to happen, you know, over time.
What about the medical profession? Do you feel there's going to be a lot of doctors unemployed?
I think a lot of high-priced services, whether it's lawyers, doctors, are going to be unemployed because as a nation, we simply can't afford them. You know, I mean, we can't afford a lot of these services because, we have to produce. I mean, that's the problem. And if you try to look at things like as an island economy, there's a bunch of guys, they crash on an island, and, you know, they're all starving, and one of them says, well, I want to be a lawyer, the other one wants to be a psychiatrist, another one wants to be an artist. Well, you know, the island can't afford that because everybody's going to starve to death. You know, it's only if there's enough people that are gathering the food and that are taking care of the basic needs that somebody can decide, you know, I'm not going to look for food today, I'm going to paint a picture. You know, you have to have that capital and that wealth. The service sector needs to be supported by a manufacturing sector. And so, a lot of the people that are in these types of jobs are going to lose their jobs because we simply can no longer afford them as a nation.
I really appreciate it. I think Ludwig von Mises will be very proud of your work, and you really spelled it out clearly what we should expect to see happen. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I know I have a couple more calls on the line. Let me take a quick break. We'll play the commercial, and I will be back for more calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. We've got a few calls online, but if you want to call, the number is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Let's take a call. Josh from California.
How you doing, Peter?
Hey, how are you?
Alrighty, not bad, not bad. I was driving around today, and I was listening to, I have satellite radio, and I was listening to CNBC, and I didn't get a chance to watch Ben Bernanke's testimony in front of Congress, but I got to listen to quite a bit of it. And one thing that really struck me was when Ben Bernanke dodged the comment from Ron Paul about the U.S. dollar going down. Did you happen to catch that?
Yeah, well, he didn't, you know, Ron Paul just kind of referenced it, but what caught me was a couple of Congressman Paul Blake asked him a question about the dollar losing value, right? And Ben Bernanke's answer, I'm going to write my commentary about this, I think. Ben Bernanke's answer was, I'm not allowed to talk about the dollar. You know, I'm not allowed to talk about it. You know, I can't talk about the dollar. Now, I mean, it's just almost ridiculous. He is in charge of the Federal Reserve. He's in charge of monetary policy. He's in charge of creating dollars. He's in charge of setting interest rates on dollars. How can he not talk about the dollar? That's our money. He's in charge of monetary policy, yet he's not allowed to talk about the money? It is so ridiculous. All these congressmen are asking him questions that have absolutely nothing to do with the Federal Reserve. They're talking to him about unemployment rates. They're talking about wage disparities between the races. They're talking about black unemployment versus white unemployment. There's all kinds of political things where he certainly has no problem talking about them, yet they're completely irrelevant to his job. Yet the one most relevant question that is asked to him, the dollar is losing value. What do you think about that? Oh, I can't talk about the dollar? It's amazing. That's incredible.
Exactly. Well, actually, Ron Paul did say when he was talking about the dollar and its decline, Bernanke did say something about inflation. He said, "Well, you're dodging my comment." And then he said, "Well, I don't see anything in the near future of what happened from '79 and '80 about the dollar declining." That's pretty much how he ended it on that. But
he said he wasn't worried about a big decline in the dollar causing a big jump in interest rates like we had in 1980. And of course, then he added the comment, "Well, you've got your fingers crossed. And you're hoping."
That's exactly what he said afterwards. And one thing that just really, there's only been a handful of people that's been, you know, pretty much right on target. Well, not too many, only you and maybe a couple others, but mainly you that I follow. And I mean, everybody that I see, you know, subprimes contain, housing is contained, but yet it gets worse. I don't get it. I don't understand. Is that nobody is, you know, seeing the problems that's coming along now? But you know what I mean? But anybody that did will just totally put them down, like you on CNBC or Fox. Wow, I mean, I'm surprised that you know, people get a little irritated on that.
One of the most interesting exchanges was when one of the congressmen asked Bernanke, if you could have a conversation with your counterpart in China, what would you tell him to persuade him that allowing the yuan to rise would be in the interest of the Chinese people? Which, of course, it would be, but of course, it would be not in our interest. Of course, he couldn't figure that out. And what he said is, number one, he said, well, they would have their own independent monetary policy, and right now, you know, they're creating too much money, so they have an inflation problem, and they're an asset bubble, which, duh, same thing we're doing. But the only reason they're doing that is to buy up all these dollars, which is, we're the beneficiary of that, because they put all that money into treasuries. So basically what he said is if they dropped the peg, they wouldn't have to buy all these treasuries, which is great for them, but lousy for us, which they couldn't put two and two together. And then he said that the Chinese economy, about 40% of their economy goes towards consumer spending, imports, domestic consumption, and that if they let their currency go up, then they would have much more domestic consumption because their citizens would have more buying power and could afford to consume more, which is exactly what I'm saying is the reason that eventually they're going to let the dollar collapse because it helps them. But again, they didn't put two and two together. If the Chinese consume more of their production themselves, that means there's less available to send to us. So basically, Bernanke admits that if the Chinese let their currency rise, the net effect for America is that interest rates rise in America and consumer prices rise in America.
Yeah, exactly, because and the more we have to pay China back on the debt that we already are servicing.
So how can that be a good thing for us, and why would these congressmen be trying to browbeat the Chinese government into raising inflation and raising interest rates for Americans? They can talk about it, but they couldn't even put two and two together. I mean, only in Congress.
Yeah, and they're wanting and the HUD Secretary Alfonso Jackson, is it, that just went over there to, you know.
I wrote about that. He went over there to try to beg the Chinese government to buy more of our mortgage-backed securities.
That are blowing up right now just about.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, that's hilarious. So you said how many of these funds with these?
Well, there are over 9,000 hedge funds in existence. And I don't know how many of them are in these structured mortgage products, but I bet it's a lot more than two.
And I did hear of another one blowing up. I guess it was called Galena, if I'm not mistaken. There was another one that New York Times was posting on that was also pretty much, you know, the same demise as the other ones. And it's just baffling to me just to see it all go down. And it must be really hard for you to be a bear like this because, you know, what you're saying is pretty much on target. It seems like you're saying the fundamentals, but they're, you know, preaching psychology. You know what I mean?
Not really.
Pretty much what I'm saying is you know where something's supposed to be, but you just don't know when because you don't know when the psychology is going to change.
Well, yeah, there's no way to know when. I mean, it's like that's just all these old sayings, you know, how many straws will break a camel's back. You just don't know. I mean, and of course, a lot of people have underestimated the strength of this camel, and whenever we do, the other people who say, well, the camel can hold an infinite amount of straws, and they'll keep saying, you've been saying this for years, you know, this is what people have been saying, and they use that to discredit you. But even Ben Bernanke admitted himself when he was talking to Ron Paul that, yes, this cannot go on indefinitely, that something's going to happen, that we cannot keep borrowing and selling financial assets indefinitely. So he admits we can't do it forever, but he's not afraid that we're going to run it, that forever is going to happen sometime soon. So he must think that, you know, we have another 10 or 20 years or 30 years, but I don't know.
What do you think the next shoe is to drop? Do you think that Chinese maybe will stop buying our treasury somewhat? Maybe they're already...
Look, as I say, I think we're very close to the dollar breaking down, and, you know, I think that if it does break down another 10% from here, breaks through support, I think that that will cause the bond market to fall. But so far, the bond market has really not collapsed with the dollar. I mean, interest rates have picked up a little bit, but today, you know, even though the dollar was sank today, interest bonds went up. But I think if we start to see big moves down in the bond market following the dollar, that could be the next shoe, because that's, you know, that's the real big thing. I mean, Ben Bernanke basically talked about two things. It was like, what are you going to do? Are you going to hike rates or are you going to ease rates? Basically, he's saying if weakness in subprime and housing spills over to the overall economy, well, then I need to cut rates. But if inflation, if higher oil prices, you know, move into the core and we start to see higher overall core prices, then I'll have to hike rates. But what he's overlooking is what if they both happen at the same time, which is the most likely scenario, that the economy goes into recession but inflation gets worse, right? What's he going to do? Cut rates or raise rates? You know, obviously he can't do both. And he could decide to do nothing, which is what he's done so far, but eventually doing nothing is not going to be the solution.
Yeah. From watching everything that you've seen by him, and if basically it was going to be, if he had to choose one or the other, a deep recession or the dollar just collapsing, which one do you think he would choose?
Well, if he lets the dollar collapse, the recession will be even deeper. So it's not that there actually is a choice, and I still think he's going to have to raise rates. I don't think he's going to be able to cut rates, because I think if the minute he starts cutting rates, the long bond is going to get killed, and then it's going to make the matters even worse. So I don't know. I mean, it's guessing. I don't know what he's going to do, but I think if he could pick it perfectly, he would try to create just enough inflation to get us out of this mess. If there's a way to do that, but I don't think that there is. But I know that he's predisposed to wanting to inflate and print enough money to stop prices from collapsing, but. I don't know how it's going to end up, but we don't have to know. The only thing we want to know is we don't want to have our money in dollars, we don't want our money in U.S. assets, because however this thing pans out, it ain't going to be good for dollars. And, you know, so you don't want to have your money here, you know, because there's no decision that they can do. There's no course that they can take that's going to lead to a higher value of the dollar.
Yep. And one more question. I know time's limited. You always have a lot of callers on, but I wanted to ask you one more thing. And that's when he was in. It was Ron Paul, and so was the chairman and some others. Like I said, I didn't watch it. I just heard it. But they were talking to Bernanke about excluding food and energy from the from the inflation rate, from the CPI, or however they calculate it. And what I don't get is that they say that they exclude those two because they're short bursts, like they may go up. But
the original reason for excluding them was that they said they were volatile, that they're up big and then down big and up big. So if they're up right now, well, they might go down, so we don't want to look at it. But now they've been going up for 5 or 6, 7 years in a row, and it's hard to say they're volatile. But now what he's saying is, well, the reason we want to exclude them is because we don't think they're going to keep rising. He says, yes, they've risen a lot in the past, but we think they're going to flatten out. And therefore, we don't want to pay attention to how much they've already gone up because we think they're not going to go up anymore. But, of course, they've thought that for the entire time. And, if actually, if you look at the charts and you look at the fundamentals, there's no reason to believe that oil prices and food prices are going to stop rising. So that is a foolish assumption.
Oil's going to keep going higher. We're still in demand on it. I mean, we're still hitting records on consumption out here, aren't we?
I mean, there's no reason. He is making very foolish assumptions. He's seeing a trend that's been in motion for years and assuming it's going to stop. And he only bases it on the futures markets, which shows that the futures, the commodity traders are not betting on a big price increase. Well, they're not betting on a decrease either. They don't really know what's going to happen, but. I mean, that's ridiculous to try to say, well, because futures prices aren't predicting. I mean, I remember for a long time, the futures markets were predicting that oil prices would go down. And that was the case for a while. And now they're predicting that they're going to stay high. But when they used to do when the front month was at 50, the back month was at 40. But now it's not anymore. So, I mean, people are not as aggressively betting on oil prices collapsing as they were 10 years ago. And they were wrong, I mean, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And they were wrong then. So what makes them think that now they're right and that they're going to stay the same?
Yeah, because I remember last year OPEC was talking about just cutting down on some of their supply. And do you think that now, that with them cutting their supply, they finally is reaching up to where, on the price side, to where we have a shorter supply?
Well, I mean, I know whatever the supply is, it's not going to be able to grow in line with the demand. And the demand is a function, we're printing all this money. And all these central banks that are printing money, people have that money to buy oil. And they're going to spend it,
Alrighty, Peter. Well, I'm going to buy a bunch of your books. I'm going to be handing them out to my family, and I appreciate your take.
Okay, thanks for the support, and keep buying them. And you have an account with us yet?
No, I don't, but I'll be opening one here real soon.
All right, great. Thanks for the call, Josh.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Calvin in North Carolina. Go ahead, Calvin.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Just like to thank you for your commentary and advice. It's prompted me to become more of an avid saver and kind of woke me up a little bit to some things I've been oblivious to, and it's allowed me to accumulate more savings. I wanted to comment on you mentioned the Mark Haynes use of your Dow pricing versus inflation commentary that you've given in the past, and I was just thinking, I heard that today, and I was just like, maybe he's finally starting to get it.
I saw an interview this morning with Joe Battipaglia, and I was like very impressed. That, I mean, he was saying a lot of my stuff now. I mean, after all these years of debating me, all of a sudden he's starting to say the things that I've been saying.
Absolutely. Another thing, you spoke of the Chinese not needing our dollars to buy their goods and the explosion of their own buying power on a show that you did. I saw one of the archive shows you did on Fox on the 10th or 11th. And the panel just kind of laughed, and the guy, I guess it was in the box above you, I forgot his name, but he was just really very disagreeable with that situation that you were describing. Well, earlier this week on MSN Home, I forgot the reporter's name, but she did a report, a whole series called Keeping Up with the Wings. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yeah.
But it was about the explosion of the Chinese middle class. So the more I study what you read or what you put out there, and maybe not immediately do I see validation in it, but as I keep reading and keep looking in the media, I keep finding validation to what you're saying. And I just wanted to let you know I appreciate it, and I will be transferring a 401k from Fidelity over to you guys because I think you're right on.
Yeah, appreciate it. Well, you know, look forward to getting your account. And, yeah, you know, I mean, it's so ironic. I think I know the one you're talking about, and that the fool that was talking about that, but the Chinese, you know, they're willing to work for next in sweatshops for menial wages just so they can send their products to us and get our precious dollars.
That's right.
You know, they don't need us to consume their products. There's billions of Chinese, you know. Americans don't have a monopoly on wanting consumer goods. You know, everybody wants them. You know, we're not the only people that can sit on leather couches and flip through channels on a plasma TV. You know, we're not the only people that prefer to do our laundry in a washing machine rather than hanging it on a line. We're not the only people that prefer cars to bicycles or like to listen to music on a stereo system and not a little handheld radio. I mean, the only reason that the Chinese aren't buying all these great products is because their currency is so low in value that they can't afford it. But the minute their currency rises and ours falls, then they can afford all these products, and we're the ones that can't afford them anymore.
That's exactly right.
And instead of them just getting our paper money, which they can't do anything with, they get all those great products that we have, that we certainly know how to use. I mean, you know, they'd be much better off with furniture and clothing and toys and consumer electronics than a stack of paper that they can't do anything with.
Mm-hmm. And to your last point with your last caller about Bernanke's comments about the future of oil, I work for a company that's petroleum-based product, manufactured petroleum-based products. They're forecasting with the insatiable appetite with India and China. They've been talking about it at higher levels that I've been privy to, that they know that the price of oil is just going to keep going up.
Yep. All right, Calvin. Well, thanks for the call. And again, I look forward to having you on board as a client.
Very good. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. Let's go to Tyler from California. Go ahead, Tyler.
Hey, Peter. I'm a client of Euro Pacific for over a year now. I'm real happy with my choice with going with you. I just want to ask you a question. What are you going to get some credit on TV with some of your calls here? Because they show you no respect. I mean, Mark Haynes is downright abusive towards you sometimes.
Well, at least he called me our friend Peter Schiff today when I wasn't there. So he said our friend. I don't know. I mean, I'm saying these guys can't acknowledge that I'm right. You know, and a lot of the other guests that come on, and I think the hosts aren't even as bad as some of the other guests. But a couple of them, you know, insult my intelligence. They insult my patriotism. They basically call me liar. And they don't know how to handle. As I said, they don't really know how to handle me because I'm a bear who's not short. And who's making more money for his clients than they're making for theirs. And they can't understand that. I'll go and I'll look at the list that I sent Mark Haynes, and I'll read it. And this is what I sent to Mark Haynes today. I sent him the list of my predictions, and here they are. These are the things I said on the air. Investment recommendations. One, avoid investing in U.S. stocks and bonds. Select foreign equivalents instead, with a particular emphasis on companies benefiting from growth in China. And, of course, that prediction has come true. Two, when investing abroad, stick to stocks rather than bonds, as higher global inflation and interest rates would hurt bonds worldwide. That came true. Three, U.S. dollar will continue to lose value relative to foreign currencies, undermining returns on domestic assets while enhancing returns on foreign assets. U.S. savers looking to hold cash should do so in foreign currencies. That came true. But commodity prices in general would continue to rise. Oil prices in particular would rise sharply. That happened, despite everybody else calling for oil to go down. Six, the price of gold would rise as investors looked for alternatives to a weakening dollar and other currencies that were being debased to help out the dollar. So all those investment recommendations, everything I said, avoid U.S. stocks, buy foreign stocks, stay out of the dollar, stay in commodities, all those things have been right on. I've never recommended on television shorting stocks, staying in U.S. cash. I've never given out any recommendations on CNBC that were wrong. Then I went over my economic forecast. I said, you know, reliance on core CPI is flawed as food and energy prices were not simply volatile but would rise continuously. That was true. Number two, rising food prices would soon take the spotlight from rising energy as the most troubling for consumers. That happened. As housing prices stabilized or fell, rents would rise, pushing up the core CPI, resulting in Wall Street analysts looking at core CPI ex rents. That happened. I predicted that despite weakness in the housing market and the economy, the Fed would not cut interest rates. That happened. That the housing market was a bubble and would burst, and that rising foreclosures and higher inventories of unsold homes together with tightening lending standards would cause home prices to fall. That happened. That the housing market would not rebound in the spring of 07, as was the overwhelming consensus, but it would in fact get worse. That came true. That subprime lenders would go bankrupt and that would be heavy losses among those who invested in subprime debt. That happened. And those are, you know, basically the predictions I reminded about. Those aren't the only ones. But everything that I said happened. There's even one on Fox where I predicted this. I said, you know, that the loans are going to blow up and all that. And they were laughing at me. I mean, this one guy was predicting a 10% increase in home prices this year, 2007, that real estate would go up 10%. They didn't laugh at him. I said that real estate prices were going to fall, that we have lax lending standards, it's a speculative bubble, it's going to burst, lending standards are going to contract, home prices are going to fall. They laughed at me. They didn't laugh at his craziness thinking real estate would go up 10%.
Yeah, I just want to know, I mean, the last caller asked about, like, what do you think the next step would be? Because, I mean, what you say has been happening, but it's been slow. I mean, even around here, I mean, people, real estate out in California, where I'm at, Riverside County, hasn't been great, but, you know, I haven't seen any ridiculously great deals either yet. I mean,
a year over year, real estate prices in Orange County, average medium home prices are at a record high. Same thing in Los Angeles. The sales have dropped about 30-35%, but for some reason the prices, you know, maybe the quirks in the way they measure them, but whatever it is, no, we haven't had it yet. It's coming. It's coming. But right now it's denial. You know, a lot of these phony appraisals are still there. People don't realize how much value their homes have lost. You know, sure, prices are rising, but, you know, they haven't risen nearly as much as they're going to. You know, interest rates are still relatively low for a lot of people. A lot of the mortgages haven't reset to the higher levels yet. All of this is coming. You know, all this is coming.
And it could be, like, over the course of, like, 10, 15 years, like the...
No. There's no way it's going to go 10 or 15 years. No way. No way. It's not going to be anywhere near that. I mean, we'll be lucky to make it, you know, through the end of the year without a major catastrophe. But if it doesn't happen this year, it'll certainly probably happen over the next year or two. I mean, it's just, the problems are just too severe right now. You know, and there's no way around it. I mean, there's so many holes in this dam that there's no way to stop it from bursting.
Yeah, I've got one final question. I'm in a certain industry that I kind of feel might be adversely affected. What do you look at as real bullish places? I know, you know.
Sure, are you in?
The casino industry?
Yeah, well, the casino industry is a tough call. I mean, depending on where you are. I mean, obviously, you know, Americans are going to have a lot less money to gamble with because they're going to be a lot poorer. Now, maybe some people will just gamble because they figure that's the only way they have it. You know, maybe some people might gamble to try to get ahead because they see no other way. So maybe some people will gamble more because they're poor. But I think there'll be a lot more tourists in this country. So to the extent that you're, you know, in the Vegas area, I do believe that, you know, I know a lot of people are going to Macau now in Asia, but I think when the dollar collapses, you know, there'll be a lot of people that will be interested in coming to Las Vegas from Asia and from Europe, and they'll throw a lot of money around. And so to the extent that you're operating in the tourist end of it, I think tourists into America, inbound tourism is going to pick up. No question about that.
I'm more of a local market as far as we're in near Palm Springs area.
Yeah, I mean, I think
LA.
My guess would be the casinos that cater to a local clientele will be hurt because I think the effect of your clients being much broker will more likely mean that they will spend less money on gambling and entertainment. I would think, but you know, certain aspects, I think, you know, to the extent that it's tourist related, could improve.
All right, thanks a lot, Peter. Appreciate all you.
Have you read my book?
I've read your book. I've given your book away as gifts to people. I don't know if they've heeded any of your advice. I'm just glad I have, and I hope I keep up with my investing with you in the future. So, you know, so if anything big comes down, I'll be positioned.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Hey, I don't think. Did I take the second commercial break yet? I don't think so. So if I didn't, let's take a quick break, and I'll come back for the last couple of calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families. families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro-Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back, and let's go back to the phones. Let's take Robert from Boston.
Hey, Peter, I'm glad you went over that list that you gave to Mark Haynes, because I had heard many of those calls, and I'm glad to see them all put together. I think most of the time you hit it on the money. I wanted to talk about one of your calls earlier in the year. I hope you're going to remember this. You were on CNBC in the morning show, and Joe Kernan was actually hosting instead of Haynes. And when you went into your thing about the consumer being on the brink and painting a picture of recession, he goes, yeah, we've heard that again and again from you. When's this going to happen? The first time you kind of dodged the question that you alluded to one of the earlier callers, it's hard to say when, but he did kind of put you on the spot, and you did say there would be a recession in this year, 07. Can you update that and say, would you make that same statement today after 7 months?
And I've been saying that I thought the recession would begin, by the end of 07, and, you know, I said if it did begin at the end of 07, it would be early in 08. And my thinking is, I think we already are in a recession. I think that at least the first quarter of negative growth, last quarter growth was like 1%. And I think the reason it was 1% is because we understated what the true inflation rate was. I think if we were accurately stating how bad inflation is, that it would already be obvious that our economy was contracting. And in fact, if you measure our economy in any other currency, it is in a recession right now as well. I mean, we're contracting in terms of Canadian dollars, we're contracting in terms of euros, we're contracting in terms of Australian dollars, we're contracting in terms of British pounds. So the economy is shrinking in terms of a number of currencies. It's just not shrinking in terms of the dollar. But, you know, we are not adjusting our GNP for inflation adequately to show the actual recession. But, you know, I think that it's no doubt in my mind that if 75% of our economy practically is consumption, that consumer spending is going to drop dramatically. I mean, it has to. With all these mortgage payments that are resetting higher, that means people are going to have to spend money on mortgage payments and not spend it on other things. With gasoline prices higher, with food prices higher, food has to be bought, energy has to be purchased. So if consumers are spending money on these things, they don't have it to spend in the mall or on other things. So I think, and if there's no more home equity to extract because appraisers are getting more honest and lenders are getting more, strict about who they lend money to. I mean, there's no question but that consumer spending is going to have to drop rather sharply. And I always thought that the housing market would really turn down this fall because I thought that we would have a very weak spring-summer season, which turned out to be the case. And so I thought by then maybe more Americans would realize how much value their homes had lost, and so that, you know, that would also diminish their willingness and their desire to spend.
It doesn't seem like the consumer can be worn out. I mean, the gas prices or what have you, the higher mortgage, they just continue to, go to the big box retailers and spend their paycheck. And I'm just wondering...
Well, they're spending more than their paychecks. Right. They're going into debt.
And I'm wondering if Bernanke doesn't take the punch bowl away through interest rates, whether the banks don't take credit away from better, lending standards.
No, I mean, Bernanke won't do it. It's going to be the foreign creditors or banks because, he doesn't want to do it. He's already said that. He doesn't want us to go to a recession. So we can't, if consumers stop spending, we have a recession. So the only way to postpone the recession is to keep consumers spending, even if the result is that you just exacerbate the recession that we ultimately have, because the more deeply into debt American consumers go, the more deep are the future spending cuts they're going to have to be.
But you do have to admit employment has hung in there. I mean,
people... Well, I don't trust the employment numbers. I just don't believe that the unemployment rate is 4.5%. I mean, the government is not being honest about inflation. I don't think they're being honest about unemployment. I think there's a lot of unemployed people who are not being counted as being unemployed. And I also don't believe all the statistics about job growth. I mean, I know that the majority, in fact, in most months, almost all the jobs that are created the government actually has no proof that they were created. The government just assumes that they were created. It's the birth-death model, and the government just routinely assumes that a certain number of small businesses were started every month and that they employed a certain number of people, even though they have no proof that the businesses themselves were started or that they employed anybody. So I think there's just a lot of phony numbers coming out of Washington, and you know, rather than looking at what the government says, I'd rather just look at reality. And the fact is, George Bush is the most unpopular sitting president in U.S. history. And I don't think it's because of the war in Iraq. I think it's because there's a lot of unemployed people out there who are upset. There's a lot of people who realize that their wages are growing more slow than inflation. They're drowning in debt. And I think it's because the economy is really fundamentally weak. I think that's why George Bush is so unpopular. That's always why presidents are unpopular, because the economy is not good. And right now, you have everybody on Wall Street trying to figure out, why is there a disconnect? Why is Bush so unpopular despite how great the economy is? And they won't question the premise that, wait a minute, maybe the economy isn't as great as the statistics are telling us. Because the people in real life, they don't necessarily watch CNBC every day. They don't listen to how low the government says inflation is. They go to the grocery store. They go to the gasoline station. And they see how it. They pay their health care bills. They're paying tuition. They know how much prices are rising. You know, they don't need the government to tell them there's no inflation. They know there's inflation because they're writing the checks and paying the bills. You know?
I'm going to ask you about one other kind of prediction that you made, and it's kind of in process as well. You, last year, about three times after the May pullback in precious metals, you said you thought that gold would exceed its former high during the 06 year, which it didn't, and then you said in 07 it would exceed its
high. It only got to about 700 and change. I don't know if I pinpointed when it would do it.
Well, you said in 06 it will hit a new high, and in 07 it will hit a new all-time high. And you said that about the
So in 06 it did hit a new high.
No, this is after the May pullback you said it. But regardless, it wasn't a horrible call because it's still tracking bullish, but I'm just wondering, would you...
Yeah, well, I still think that gold, if I said, I might have said that in 2007 might be the year that gold hits a new all-time high above 800, and
right.
It still might do it. It still might do it.
Okay.
But gold has been surprisingly subdued recently. But I do think if the dollar index does crack through 80 decisively and continues lower, that there's no reason why, you know, gold won't have a 50 or 100-point update and dollar update, and that we might not be able to get through 800 by the end of the year. I certainly think that we'll take out the $725 high that we established last year by the end of the year. So if we don't make it above, you know, 850 or so in calendar 07, I'm highly confident that we'll make it in calendar 08.
And in 04, you did say the dollar collapse was imminent. You kept pointing to the fact that it was bumping up against 80 again, its floor, and you thought it would go through it. So here we are 3 years later, you're saying the same.
It didn't go through it. It bounced.
Right.
Now it's back down here again. But during that time, other key currencies like the Australian dollar, the New Zealand dollar, the Canadian dollar, the British are far higher than they were a couple years ago. The only thing is the Japanese yen and the euro have not, you know, gone substantially above, and the euro is a very very big part of the dollar index. So we did buy some time. You know, all those Fed rate hikes bought us a lot of time. You know,
right.
And but now we're right back down near the bottom, and you know, all the rate hikes are in the past. You know, they're not going forward. So you know, and in the meantime, you know, even though the dollar didn't break down in the last couple of years, foreign stocks took off. So if somebody listened to my advice a couple of years ago and said, you know, Peter's talking about the dollar collapsing, let me put all my money in foreign stocks, even though the dollar hasn't collapsed, it's certainly gone down a lot, but even though it hasn't collapsed, foreign stocks have gone through the roof. I mean, I didn't even anticipate that. I had no idea that the foreign stocks I've been recommending would do so well, but they did, you know.
Well, I think your calls, if you put them on a ledger, you far outweigh the good calls versus the bad ones.
I don't even think I have any bad ones. There might be a few premature ones, but
I'll give you one. You ridiculed the Google IPO at 85, and you said in the same theme as you do on the lead into your show that the bankers are selling stocks.
I did. I did say that I didn't want to buy Google, and you know, it didn't immediately. Anybody that bought Google on the IPO, I mean, they didn't have a quick gain. I mean, it wasn't like the stock. It wasn't like an old style gain. I mean, the stock was slowly appreciating, and then over time. I mean, I had some clients call up line of short Google, and I talked people out of it. I said, look, I wouldn't short this stock. It's going up. I mean, it's got a good chart. But I didn't like it. But also, you know, I didn't like the. I ridiculed the. the IPO that just happened with Blackstone. And of course, that came out at, you know, the stock's down 10% from the IPO price. But yeah, I never like these IPOs. I just prefer to invest in other things.
Okay. Well, I think you do a good job, and I just wanted to talk to you about some of those.
Right, I got to hop. I got one more call coming in about 4 more minutes.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Yeah, let's go to Sam from Florida. Go ahead, Sam.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
All right, I'll tell you what, all these food prices here in Florida are really going up. I know milk is almost $4.50. It used to be, what was it, $3.29 last year. Now it's $4.19. And I'll have to check the lo mein noodles, you know, the little 10-cent ones. Well, now they're 13 or 14 cents. So there is definitely significant inflation with food. So there's inflation out there.
The inflation is in the money supply. The result is that food prices go up. Now, I don't like it when a lot of these commenters say, well, food inflation. It's not food inflation. It's just inflation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what would you suggest a young person like myself who believes in exactly what you're saying, but who makes a lot of money now, but from what I'm hearing from you, it sounds like there might not be much time to put my money out of the U.S. dollar. I mean, currently,
you've got to hurry up. I think, you know, I mean, if we're at these key levels right now, and there's certainly a good chance that we're going to break through them. I mean, maybe we'll bide some time. You know, we were down at this level a couple of years ago, and we didn't collapse. But
yeah,
it certainly has been lucrative for the people who invested abroad rather than those who stayed in the U.S. But, you know, we've been down on this level several times. It really looks weak. I do think the support is going to give way. And when it does, I mean, look out. It's a long drop because there's no support. And that's why I think the dollar index is going to get cut in half. I think that's, you know, when it breaks through 80, I think the next stop is 40. I mean, it won't be in a day or a week, but it could get there in a year or two.
There'll be a revolution if that happens. I mean, there'll be massive changes within the government. You'll see a candle like Ron Paul come to rise because people just...
Hopefully, I'm for that. Ron Paul, I gave him a check. I would encourage other people to do that. Anyway, I hate to cut you off. If you call again next week, but we got about 30 seconds, so we got to wrap it up and say goodbye.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks for the call, Sam. Sorry, Rob went a little long in Boston, so I didn't give you as much time as you should have. But anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll be back here again next week. You can listen again to the archives at www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net. Make sure to buy a copy or two of Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, on my website or at a bookstore. Thanks again for listening. I'll be here again next week.